Welcome to a special episode of PageCast, recorded at the Open Book Festival, Cape Town's annual literary gathering, spotlighting South African writing within a global conversation. Enjoy.
Welcome, Sarah.
Hi.
It is so lovely to be in a conversation with you. So thank you for inviting us to partake in this very intimate and mysterious debut poetry collection of yours, Not This Tender by Dryad Press. You know, I don't know where to begin, but I think good places to begin is from a place of gratitude, one poet to another. And so thank you for writing Not This Tender, for sharing this intimate work with us. And also thank you to your publisher, Dryad Press, for bringing this layered and complex and compelling work to bookshelves and to my shelf and into my world. And so thank you for making time to carving out time for this conversation. I have to say that when I, just for a little bit of backstory, I was rang up by the Jonathan Ball team and the Open Book team, and they asked me something very straightforward. They invited me to join this new co-created venture, this podcast called PageCast, and the brief was to decide on two poets that I would love to be in conversation with who are on the Open Book Festival program. And so I enthusiastically said yes, count me in. But then I also suddenly, after the call was made, realized, A, I've never done a podcast before, and two, how would I choose? But I thought to myself, when I saw your name, you were absolutely at the top of my list of people that I wanted to be in conversation with. And I give all of this backstory to say that it's important that I think poets know that, especially you, that you know that your work has sort of rippled and meandered through the local literary community, and many poets have sung praises of this debut of yours. And so I was really curious to know more about you, because I met you first on the page and now we sit face to face for the very first time to talk about this lovely work, the sensitivity of this writing, and your real interest in the composition and form of your writing. So all that to say, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
So your work has been circulating in literary circles, I feel, for some time now. And I've heard poets that I deeply respect, a sort of mixed bag of poets, sort of speak with admiration about your writing. And yet, I still feel that you are quite a mysterious figure, at least to me, though I've done lots of research and I've watched your interviews on YouTube and I've read the text, you know, but I wanted to know if you could share a little bit more about yourself. I do know that you are a Libyan-born poet and essayist, and that you're living in Cape Town at the moment, which is quite interesting. And your work talks a lot about North Africa and many various geographies. So could you share a little bit more about yourself and beyond the sort of bibliography? Who are you? How did this all come about?
I thought that was question three. So I moved here from Libya 14 years ago. So I've spent half of my life in Stellenbosch, actually Cape Town. And I always start with the same story of, okay, when I moved here, I couldn't speak English. So I went to, like, first day of high school, I couldn't say a word in English. And then I kind of, I was not knowing, but I was just like absorbing everything around me and every word around me, and just kind of like made my own little world in a new little town. And then at some point, learning the language, like, I was literally, I would go to bed with a dictionary, like first Arabic to English and then English to English. And so the only way I can tell you a little bit about myself is through this language as the lens, you know? So I know you said, who are you? I'm like, well, I grabbed a dictionary, but this is the only way I can explain it, you know? Yeah. And then kind of fell in love with other writers' work. One, like when I was in grade 10, I found the word poem in English. I hadn't known what that word meant. And then I was like, maybe I could write something to, because I've always felt like intense, lingering things that I never dealt with at the time. Yeah. And then now we have a book and it's been a decade. Yeah, we're going to need you to ask more detail.
No, I mean, I love that. It's not even on my list of questions, but just listening to what you're saying, having to learn the language, having to learn English, when, so your mother tongue is?
Libyan, which is a dialect of Arabic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's quite interesting when I hear you say that to think about how you write this poetry collection in English, having recently sort of learned the language or gradually learned the language, and then how to translate yourself from one language into another. Can you talk more about what that journey was like? Because you could have written this in your mother tongue, but you write it in English and your command of the language is outstanding. So what was that journey like, having to sort of translate yourself into a language that was kind of recent to you?
Yeah, actually, I have never written a single poem in Arabic. And I think because I started writing from a place of, like, I wanted to deal with things, and I'm emotional and I don't care about form, and I didn't sit in my room and think, oh, I'm going to be talking to you here right now. English gave me that necessary distance. Well, firstly, yeah, because I don't know if you know, you will know what I mean. Do you speak more than one language as well?
I do.
And kind of. Like your mother tongue sometimes is too intimate to express certain things.
Well, I have to admit, I'm first language English speaking, but I grew up in KZN, so Zulu, my mother's Sotho, and now I'm in Cape Town, and Xhosa, my father's Xhosa. So there's a complexity around that.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. I mean, in my case, the problem was that Arabic was way too intimate. And I didn't really have anyone to speak it with anyway, you know. So I would think in Arabic. I still think in Arabic. So I basically just have very good English, but I'm not an English person. And I realized it when I tried to count. Sorry, I'm going on a tangent, but we will get there. We will arrive. No, I don't know where we're going. So I think because I was writing to Clarice Lispector, actually one of my favorite writers, said, it feels like I'm writing to save someone's life, probably my own. And that's kind of also why I started writing. You know, I was so, I couldn't say those things in Arabic. I didn't have the words. Arabic was very painful for a long time because I come from the war, and I was like, it's also a difficult thing to all of a sudden not have language, you know, because when I moved here, like I said, I started grade 8 and I went to school and I didn't have a single word, you know. So to go from, like, and I always liked literature and Arabic, and I emceed and random things, and but then to go from that to wordlessness, and then to again start building again, like studying the grammar, and I think I was like fascinated with it, and that never went away. So I'm fascinated, like etymology, semantics, and again, like that whole thing of like, okay, shunned from Arabic, didn't have English yet, found English. Then something else you said earlier of, like, honestly, a part of why I wrote was because I needed the world to let me in. And so I was looking and looking and looking for ways to say things that, like, do you understand me? Can you love me? I'll read you that poem, actually. That was my obsession for so long. And it still is in a way. I'm like, do you understand? Because at the beginning, when I first moved, that was a very real thing. It wasn't a fear. It was a real thing. It's like, Yeah, and it's been frustrating because I've always been a very expressive person. But again, I couldn't express it in Arabic so English kind of saved me in that sense. Mm. And there's that nice distance and it's kind of gentle. And, you know, also I studied in English, did master's in English, whatever. So formally and informally. But now, because I've healed enough through this writing, I've rediscovered Arabic, or I'm able to now go back and read. I haven't written yet. Mm. Very exciting. But I couldn't have written this in Arabic, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really exciting because that whole trajectory that you're describing, which is a very digressive, knotty at times, complex journey that you've taken, you now say that you've arrived at a place of real healing. So I think, I mean, I would love to see a bilingual version of this somewhere in the future that is perhaps in your mother tongue. But I mean, you'll let us know if there's any possibility of that on the horizon.
Good business idea.
Right?
Yeah.
So I want to begin by perhaps just grounding us in Not This Tender, okay, in your work, in your writing, and maybe you could choose two poems from the collection that you feel drawn to read today and that might maybe open a path for us to enter the landscape of your work, which is not just a geographical landscape, but it's also a sort of emotional and spiritual and mystical terrain that you have crafted in this collection.
Thank you. So beautifully put. Let me read now. While I was speaking to you, I thought of Do You Understand Me, Can You Love Me poem. Oh, yeah. I can't remember the title. And then Entering a Room, which you mentioned earlier. Okay, so let me just quickly find. At 26, I am still that same plagued child, stuck between synonyms and sentences, suspended between two countries, neither of which would claim a woman, this distracted, this pedantic, this wide-eyed. I am on my knees, sifting through the parallel intensities of things. Tenderness sounds softer in English, slides like silk on the tongue. But the Libyan equivalent, grief grinds my liver when I think of you. Chafes, doesn't it? Monstrous, marvelous. It burns and burns, leaves a gutted gentleness, the kind you might learn to love if you're desperate enough. In every poem, I hide the little girl. In the best ones, she sounds nothing like herself. Resonance, dissonance, it doesn't matter. She devours all. She's mad on jasmine, eats it for dinner, leaves fruit out by the trash cans for no one. I teach her 1,000 ways to write, do you understand me? Can you love me? Watch how pretty the poem is, how it dresses itself. It's satin dress, Satan, distress. Kiss me. Kill me. Who cares? I missed Grandpa's calls. I miss Grandpa's calls.
Do you want to speak about that piece?
Sure. Shall we chat about you? What did you think?
I mean, I'm really interested in the little girl, and I'm really interested in the ways in which the piece toys with language and subverts our expectations in the writing, and the sort of the kill and the Satan and the Saturn, and there's all the ways in which you are playing and breaking and questioning language. Mm. And so I'm really interested, particularly with the little girl, but with the ways in which you are grappling with language in such creative ways in the piece.
Yeah, honestly, with this poem and the little girl that you're talking about, it's almost like this, it's like one of my favorite theorists calls it, she does a lot of work on translation, she calls it like respectful infidelity. basically to language or to poetry. So I can see, I don't know if you can hear it, but I'm having fun and I'm not taking it seriously. Mm. And there's like this like evil child type of thing of like, look, I can do whatever I want in language. And I think that's also why why I write is like, well, it's my page, mm. you know, like, you know, of course. So that's one layer, mm. just like being able to, And also just wowed. Like, I'm genuinely wowed. The little girl is me and she's just objectively, like, wondrous about... I mean, Kiss Me and Kill Me are very similar, you right. know, resonance. Just, I'll find a new word tomorrow and I'll be like, oh, my God. So there is that childlike, childish and childlike, mesmerized little girl on the one hand. On the other hand, it's frustrating and tiring and, you know, just sitting and... Because that's, you know, sometimes it just feels like I'm sifting through synonyms. I joke with my best friend. I joke that sometimes as a writer, it feels like I'm a grifter because I'm just putting words next to each other. I'm not really contributing by creating a product or whatever. Like this, so in my head, it's like, wow, I will sit with a poem. Some of the difficult ones probably spent hundreds of hours. There's one, Russian Holiday, I've spent easily 100 hours on that poem.
I love that.
Because it wouldn't, yeah.
I love Russian Holiday 1 and 2.
Yeah, 1 and 2. They were one.
Oh.
But I wanted to smack the reader. So I hit, you know. But yeah, it costs you something to have to sit with those memories for that long. And so when poems like these come about, then it's like fun. And I feel like very unruly and like a child.
Mm.
So that's the little girl.
Mm. I like that, you know, I was talking to a mentor and friend of mine, Kobus Mollman.
Yes, I love Kobus, yes.
And, you know, we always say, you know, we talk about all the new work coming out and we share work. And the work that we love the most, we often say we love this collection or that poem because as a reader, I can sense that this work cost you something. It cost the author something to write this. This is not some afterthought. This is not something written in the back of an Uber or whatever. Somebody sat and put themselves on the line to write this. And there's a certain sense of vulnerability mm. that you can always sense mm. in the writing that makes it poignant.
Mm.
And so I felt that in your writing, which is why I wanted to talk about this thing.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. And the cost, specifically that cost, I was thinking about that last night, like cost.
The cost of it.
Like what it costs. Right? Yeah. It's strange, eh?
Yeah.
Expenditure. Roland Barthes calls it expenditure and like this weird maths of like, you know, I'm really interested in language as desire and desire as language, you know, and so I've been reading a lot of him and last night I was just, he calls it like, he, you know, we, there is like a weird mathematics of madness of like, okay, well, I'm thinking about you and I wrote about you and I gave you this poem and there's like expenses, but you want to tell the other, or in my case, I'm putting, it's really tricky to, So, for example, these poems I started writing 10 years ago, okay? So it's really tricky to arrive at a point where I thought, okay, they're ready. So every year I wanted to submit to Dryad. It's always been my dream to do my debut. And it just, they didn't feel ready. And then last year I was like, actually, you know. And Michelle Betty, the publisher, was an incredible mentor. And, you know, but when I, like, the manuscript I gave her looked a lot like this. Like, she didn't, you know, she trusted me and the poems kind of finally rearranged themselves into the thing that I was looking for. But between then and when I started, there was obviously a lot of resentment from my side towards my story, towards myself for exposing myself, and towards the world when I was angry at the world. And so the cost, you know, at the beginning when I was grappling with these poems, sometimes I'd be like, well, why must I do this? You know, why? Like, no, you know, I don't, why must I have to put everything here, you know? But then again, and only when I said, you know, healing, obviously it's that you don't heal ever, but you're not, yeah, that's a whole different conversation. But just to find that, like, to arrive at a space of beauty where it doesn't feel like the price you don't want to pay. So I've very happily, put it, it's not scary, you know, to think, okay, yeah, even if no one reads it, but it's just on the shelf everywhere. And like, you could basically find out anything you want about me. Mm-hmm. But with poetry, that's why I love it as a form. It can always, as I said, like plausible deniability. You know? You can't prove anything.
Right.
Yeah, but it does cost you something, right? And I'm sure you felt it as well, like
absolutely.
In your writing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you want to give us a second offering?
Yes. Okay. So you want Entering Your Room? I know you
do. I love it.
Let's read it. Okay. The poem is deceptive. We are not the children of tomorrow, so do not break my door with spring and summer, with ponds and pearls. I saw you sitting in a puddle of survivor's guilt, and I walked right past. I've got my own rivers to drink dry. All I wanted was shelter for the night. Hold me cowardly, that I may wake and walk. My bed was set on fire 13 years ago, and now, touch me where there is already blood. Touch like burn and bandage. Look what I've done with this room. I've charred the walls, smoked your perfume out of the pillows. Oh, and honey, I won't be able to make the dinner date or breakfast in bed. Cannot get back. Got caught in the details, in the open fire. Caught stealing bread, breaking my affection against your wishes. Whispering to the enemy, or in the bombs of 2011, a boy's body, a match lit, another woman bodiless. There's this saying in Libyan. How does it go? Oh God, I am trying to detangle memory from trauma, to open back doors to my childhood so as not to have the alarms impale me. Entering a room is not the same as exiting it. That's how it went. Entering a room is not the same as exiting it, and you have been entering and entering so sinless. Look at the mess I've made. Each poem I give you is a paper cut that seems insipid. The blood just won't gush, goddammit. Out of a scab, I write a ballad, bleed sobriety dry out of boredom. You hide my history from me. Lacer the pages like gill nets. I think of the Mediterranean and its depravities. Lapping at my mouth, I think of the Roman ruins on which Roma built us a house. And now, ruined ruins. And now, revelation inside mirages. To want you is to betray the war. To change my mind after I've buried everyone I swore I'd die before. Awake, awaking up too gentle. Give me your mouth like a hook. Pass my panties, I need to go back to my country. For entering a room is not the same as exiting it, and I have been exiting and exiting so sinless.
Sarah. On that note, thank you, because your work really weaves together in very deliberate ways memory and landscape, your question, longing, belonging, and your poetics and your debut have really taken us through such an incredible journey. I wish we could go on forever, but I just really thank you for this debut, the power of it. And for sharing it in all of its vulnerability and in all of its textures. It's incredibly sensual and sensory, and could only be written by you. So
thank you so much.
Thank you
for the space and the questions. Wow, what a good
too short a time.
Yeah, you and I should start our own podcast.
I think so.
Yeah.
Not enough time, but thank you so much for making space for this conversation. And I encourage everybody to go and I need a signature from you after this conversation. So I encourage everybody to get it. And thank you to Open Book and the Jonathan Ball team for inviting us to talk about this powerful debut. Thank you, Sarah.